It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Like so many college campuses, the Iowa State University campus is home to some truly beautiful trees, trees that have been part of the landscape for a long time. And the Heritage Trees Program at Iowa State University preserves those trees and their offspring for the future. And with me now is Bill Graves, Associate Dean of the Graduate College and Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Hello, Bill.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
And give us just a little thumbnail history of the Heritage Trees Program at Iowa State.
Oh, well, for a number of years, tree enthusiasts on our campus have talked about developing a program like this. And about 5 years ago, some donors stepped forward and donated some money to the Iowa State University Foundation to start an effort for this, and that allowed us to get started, and we have students in the horticulture department involved being essentially interns, learning how to propagate trees and estimate the age of trees and catalog and take records of these historical trees. And so 4 years ago, we had our first sale to the public of some of the progeny of one of our trees. We've been selling progeny from one tree each year at this time to alumni and friends and anyone who would like to purchase seedlings from these historical trees.
So you're not only creating the seedlings that you can sell to people who might be interested, but I mean, doing research on these trees that, of course, are pretty easy to take for granted as you walk to class every day or work on campus.
That's exactly right. We're doing our best to estimate the age of the trees. In many cases, we don't have records of precisely when they were planted or who planted them or where they came from. Apparently, some of the very first trees on our campus were brought in from stream beds from the Skunk River and the Squaw Creek, which run through Ames. Some of the sycamore trees are believed to have been moved from locations like that right around the edges of town to our central campus area. And early photographs of the Iowa State campus indicate that it was fairly barren of trees when it was just getting started. So the fact that it's so lush with vegetation today and the vegetation is so diverse is really a testament to all the efforts that many people have made over many decades to establish such a fine collection of plant material on campus. And it certainly helps us with teaching students about plants and particularly trees in my case.
Well, and was there any a moment that was kind of a wake-up call where you or others on campus realized, oh, you know, these trees were planted and have been taken care of and they're beautiful in our landscape, but they're also getting really old?
Yes, exactly. And, you know, I think it's just sort of a heartbreaking experience every time you hear the chainsaw somewhere out on campus and you realize that a tree is being removed. In the vast majority of cases, I think everyone or most people would agree that the older trees that are being removed are being removed for good reasons. Usually it's because of a safety concern. They may develop cavities in their trunks or their upper branches that create weakness in the structure so that if we have a windstorm or snow accumulates on the limbs, they're prone to breaking. And if they're along a sidewalk where we have thousands of students crossing every day, you know, it's a definite concern for the safety of the campus community. So, about 5 years ago or so, a tree on our campus, a catalpa, a very old, interesting-looking tree near Pearson Hall, for those of the audience who know about the campus, for years it had been on the watch list and was a tree of concern for its possible weakness in its structure, and we had arborists evaluate it, and they really did confirm that it should be removed. So we were able to collect seeds from that catalpa shortly before it was taken down, and today I'm proud that one of those seedlings is exactly where the original tree was and is growing beautifully, and there's a sign by it explaining the origin of the tree and that it really was the start of this heritage tree program.
So what trees are you offering up this year? What trees on campus are you preserving?
Well, my students and I are growing several species, but the one that we are offering this year for sale is ginkgo, Ginkgo biloba, commonly just known as ginkgo. It's also sometimes called maidenhair tree.
And now I have to stop you because I am a graduate of Iowa State University and often walked under the ginkgo trees on the Iowa State campus.
I know where you're going with this, Cherry.
They are beautiful, beautiful trees. But the smell when those fruits ripen is just atrocious. So as you're selling seedlings, I know that there are male ginkgo and female ginkgo. Preserving these trees, are you being careful not to pass along the smell?
If we could, we would. But unfortunately, so what we collected these fruits back in late, or actually they're seeds, not technically. The botanists in the audience should know that they're actually seeds.
I wasn't focusing on science, just the smell.
Well, we collected the seeds from beneath the trees in that grove, and it's on the west side of Cad Hall, one of our most treasured old buildings on campus. It used to be called Old Botany. And those trees are both, some of them in the grove are male trees and some are females. The females regularly produce seeds and have been doing so since they were probably about 25 years old. That's when ginkgos begin to be able to form seed if they're the females. And we have no way of knowing which seedlings are going to are males or females, and the females then producing the seeds in about 20 years from now. We just have no way to know.
I guess you'll know eventually.
Yeah, but I should point out that there are people in the world who treasure those seeds. You're correct. I think everyone understands that they have a very foul smell for about a month after they fall to the ground. But Asians use the seeds in cooking, in traditional Chinese cooking. And they're considered quite a luxury item in the cuisine of China. So I know you have a TV show on cooking, Charity. Maybe you should use some ginkgo seeds in one of your dishes.
We'll take that under advisement. Okay. But they are incredibly beautiful trees.
They are.
And that grove on campus is really stunning. You had other universities come to you? And because I know, I mean, Iowa State University is, in my opinion, one of the most beautiful campuses in the United States, but there are many other beautiful campuses with beautiful trees. Have other people come to you and said, we need to do this on our campus?
There has been a lot of interest. I've talked about this program on other college campuses, have been invited to speak. Next spring, I've been invited to go visit Virginia Tech University to talk about the program. And I've been on other campuses over the past couple of years, and there is quite a bit of interest. There are other schools that have done things like this. Texas A&M had a tree on their campus that was quite treasured by alumni, and some seedlings from it were propagated and provided to alumni. So, you know, I can't say we were the first to think about this concept, but as far as I know, we're the only university that does this on an annual basis.
It also makes me think about the trees that I have loved in my life, and my parents just lost a tree that was my climbing tree when I was a child, and I thought, you know, we should have thought about that. Is this something that you encourage people to do on their own, to create seedlings for trees that they love?
Certainly. Yeah, I think that would be a great idea. And, you know, parents can pass these along to children and grandchildren. And I think it's a wonderful way to extend the heritage of, you know, a key part of, in your case, your childhood.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. Bill Graves, Associate Dean of the Graduate College and Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, will be with us. We've been talking about the Heritage Tree Program, but I'm pretty sure he can answer some tree questions as well. And Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist, will also be here. They'll both be answering your questions about the plants and trees in your life. The number to call, 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. With me, Bill Graves, Associate Dean of the Graduate College and Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. And now joining us, Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Welcome back from vacation. We missed you.
Well, it was fun.
Good, good. All right, and they're here to answer your questions about the plants and trees in your life. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Jeff is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Jeff.
Hello, Charity.
Hi, what's your question?
It's for the fellows your fellow Hort Day committee members. I have I think it's mulberries, trees on my property, but I've noticed in where the arm of the branch comes out or down at the base of the tree, there's liquid, and it collects in where the tree, I don't know what that is, so maybe they could understand that too.
So liquid oozing out of the mulberry tree, you think?
Could be.
Yeah, at the base, and then also in where there's a little cup next to the tree limb comes into the trunk.
Okay. That could be what they call wet wood or slime flux.
Oh.
And that occurs on a number of trees, including elm and mulberry. And basically it's a bacterium. You have a wound, and this bacterium gets in the wound and apparently causes pressure to build up within the trunk of the tree. And so then sap is kind of pushed out of these wounds, and it kind of drips down the trunk. Oftentimes it can be quite smelly because you have, once you have this forming on the outside, you have various fungi, bacteria, yeast that will sometimes feed on it. And so it can be kind of gross looking, kind of orangey, yellow, smelly. But as far as the tree is concerned, it's not a big deal. It's not a significant problem. It's something that they tolerate pretty well.
Other trees like oaks or maples catch that from the?
Well, it's not something they would catch readily. No, it's most common on certain trees like let's say elms and mulberries.
Okay.
And in the olden days, what they used to do is to insert a pipe below where it was dripping out, so that the sap would then flow out the spout and then down to the tree or down to the ground directly. But that really didn't solve the problem, and so it's no longer done. So basically we just kind of ignore the situation.
Yeah. Well, and we don't like mulberries at my house, so basically. And ginkgos are smelly, so. Okay, thank you.
Also, mulberries taste good, too.
That's true. Well, Jeff, yeah, thanks a lot for your...
Mulberries and ginkgos are both male and female species.
That's
like
true.
Like jojoba bushes.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. So they have a lot of things in common, I guess, although one fruit tastes a little bit better. Probably.
A lot better.
I haven't eaten a ginkgo fruit, although I guess it's the nuts that they actually use.
That's right.
To cook with, so you have to make your way through what is not technically a fruit to get to the nut. All right. Let's go to the next call. Nick on the line in Cedar Falls. Hi, Nick.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Hey. My parents have a whole 40-foot line of lilac bushes. They've been around for about 40 years, and they've been trimmed back, and they decided they don't want them to grow back. What's the best way to tackle that aside from pulling them?
Well, that would be probably one option, would be to pull them out. I would say they have a really large root system. They are very tough, difficult to pull out. The other option would be, I guess, to cut them off near the ground and apply Roundup to the cut surfaces, and that would destroy the root system.
Okay, typically in one application, or I suppose they'd sprout back a little bit and then you're going to tackle that?
Yeah, you might have to come back and do it again. So what you might want to do, for example, would be to, let's say, cut them off maybe 4 or 5, 6 inches above the ground, apply your Roundup, and then if they resprout, maybe cut off another inch or two, apply more Roundup, and eventually once you get the root system destroyed, that's it. But either pulling or maybe Roundup.
Okay. Thank you so much.
All right, Nick. Thanks a lot for your call. And their tenacity is something that a lot of us really value about lilac bushes.
Yes, yes. But as far as getting rid of them, it's difficult because they don't give up easily.
All right. Here's a question from Ryan. My wife and I bought a house in August, and we're already planning what we can do with the yard for next spring. In particular, a couple of areas that are all grass, we would like to plant shrubs or hostas. These are in fairly shady areas and have the ground covered with mulch. With that in mind, what would you recommend we do this fall to prepare for next spring? Should we pull up the grass and apply mulch this fall? Should we wait? What do you think?
Well, you do have to somehow destroy the existing vegetation. You can, for example, go out with Roundup if you wanted to, and that would kill the grass. You could also maybe go out with a sod cutter if it's good quality grass, and you could actually cut the sod and use it elsewhere. You could just maybe cover the area with a tarp for a while, but you do have to kill the existing vegetation. So,
if they put down like landscape cloth and mulch, would that do it? Like if they did that this fall and then by the spring, that would be destroyed?
It might. So they would want to cover it with several inches of mulch, maybe 3 or 4 inches. And blocking the sunlight would probably kill the vegetation pretty well.
Okay, but a tarp would be more effective than landscape cloth.
I think it would.
All right. But if they are willing to do that this fall, that can be a great way to take care of the grass, right?
And then they'll be ready next spring to plant. So.
Okay. Here is a question from Ryan in Van Meter on the Heritage Tree Program. Any plans to propagate and sell European larch from the beautiful trees on Central Campus at Iowa State?
The larch on our campus are on our list. We have not collected from them yet, but they're on our short list of additional species to focus on in the years to come. So far, we've been working only with species that are native to North America or once were, as ginkgo once was, but no longer is considered native. But at one time it did exist in North America.
Interesting. All right, so they're a maybe. Is that taking away from
that? I think there's hope for, within the next few years, yes.
All right, and another comment about the Heritage Tree Program. This one's from Michelle in Marshalltown. She said, I think it's such a neat program at Iowa State. My dad planted a maple tree the year I was born. When I was a kid, we took seedlings to my grandpa's house in Wisconsin and planted them in the yard. I'd forgotten about this until last spring when I visited my aunt, who now owns the house. My uncle from Michigan was visiting, and my aunt suggested we all get our picture taken by Michelle's tree. It was a neat moment for me and my son to stand in front of this tree that was the child of the tree my dad planted nearly 50 years ago.
Oh, that's a great story.
That's neat. Yeah. All right, let's go back to the phones. Greg is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Greg.
Hey, how you doing, Charity?
Good. What's your question?
Yes, hey, thank you so much for hosting Hort Day, by the way. So, Bill and Richard, have a question. I have a mature pin oak. It's probably about 25, 30-footer, and I made the mistake of having somebody trim it in May. And now in the last month to 6 weeks, we've had significant leaf drop. Just wondered, did I kill the tree?
Now, when you say leaf drop, meaning individual leaves or clusters of leaves?
Individual.
Okay.
Are they changing color before they fall, the leaves?
Yeah, they're brown.
Okay. Is this scattered throughout the canopy or on very specific branches?
Scattered.
Scattered. Well, I don't think it's oak wilt. Oak wilt typically occurs around midsummer, where you start to see the browning of foliage, bronzing of foliage, and leaf drop. And it usually occurs very quickly at that point once it begins. So I'm guessing it's not that. I'm not sure exactly what's going on, but that is the biggest concern when you prune an oak tree, basically in spring or early summer. In that oak wilt is a fungal disease, very common on oaks. It's spread by an insect, and that insect is very active in the spring and early summer. And so you can have this insect transfer the disease from one tree to another. So that's the reason we don't prune. But like I said, oak wilt symptoms typically show up about midsummer, and they progress very quickly. Usually if you have an infection and you see symptoms by, let's say, early to midsummer, usually by fall, the tree may be dead in the case of a pin oak or red oak. So I'm guessing it's not that. So I'm not sure exactly what's going on, but I don't think it's oak wilt.
All right, so he may have dodged a bullet.
Yes,
here?
I'm encouraged. I'm still encouraged. So
very good. Well, thank you all very much once again. Really enjoy Hort Day. So thank you.
Yeah,
so
thank
much.
You,
appreciate
Greg.
It.
Thank you very much. And so again, with oak trees, only when it's cold.
Yes, ideally, basically December, January, February, but definitely not April through July and August. Definitely not.
All right, Roger's on the line in Ames. Hi, Roger.
Hello. Thanks so much for your program.
Yeah, what's
I have
your
a question about the ginkgo. If you plant one ginkgo tree by itself and there's no others around and it turns out to be a female, will it have fruit?
Probably. There's enough pollen. There are enough ginkgos in our region, and the pollen travels effectively enough in the air that it's quite likely that there will still be seeds.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Good question, though. Nice try.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for your call, Roger. And you could you clean up the fruit as it falls? With that, I keep calling it fruit. Sorry, I don't have another word for
that's
it.
Okay.
Could you clean that up as it falls and kind of minimize the smell impact in 20, 25 years when it starts to be a problem?
Yes, you can do that. You can collect. The earlier you collect after they fall to the ground, the better. They're fairly firm and intact when they first fall. If you can get out and pick them up, you know, every day or two, when they start to fall, that's great, because it's really not until a couple of weeks after they fall that they start to degrade, and that's when they really develop the odor.
Right.
So early cleanup, you can avoid a lot of the problem.
When thousands of students tromp across them on the sidewalk, then the odor really spreads.
Yeah, but it's a good teachable moment.
Sure. All right, Don is on the line in Woodward. Hi, Don.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for your show today.
Yeah, what would you like to talk about?
I'd like to talk about really massive, massive chinkapin oaks we have. They would fall into the heritage category, definitely. The smaller of the two has a breast height diameter of about 3 foot, which by my guess is about 200 years old. And the larger of the two is breast height diameter about 3.5 feet, and I think this tree is about 250 years old. These are both on the federal property right next to the High Trestle Trail Bridge between Woodward and Madrid. So I just wanted to mention that if you're in the boonies, looking around, there are some really amazing, massive trees out there in the Sarahville Corridor.
All right. Yeah. Don, thanks a lot for your call. And there are just incredible trees all over the state. And there's the Champion Trees program, too, that if you're looking for these giant trees, you can look them up and find them, right?
That's right.
The DNR, I think, has that list, yes.
All right. So, but they sometimes really surprise you. You'll see an amazing oak tree, and you'll think, wow,
yeah,
it stops you in your tracks, right?
Chinkapin oak is a fantastic oak that we don't use enough, I think, in gardening. So for those interested, they should look into it.
And maybe gather a few acorns.
That's right.
All right. Here is a question from George. I planted over 100 bare root vinca minor last spring in a very shaded area on the north side of my house. After planting, I mulched them with bark. They seem to be quite healthy with minimal, less than 10% loss over the summer, although there was not a lot of runner growth. The question is, do I need to do anything for their winter care?
I wouldn't do a thing. They should be fine. They're pretty hardy plants. The only thing they really don't like is constant moisture. They can sometimes develop a root rot, but as far as hardiness, they're pretty sturdy.
All right, and here's a question from Brian in Iowa City. Is it too late in the season now to do lawn aeration and overseeding? Would it not be worth the cost of the seed?
Okay, as far as overseeding, it's kind of iffy right now. I would say there's a reasonably good chance, maybe 50-50 or so. And so I would do it as soon as possible. The best time is basically between mid-August, mid-September. Now it's basically tomorrow going to be October 1st. So they need to get it done, I would say, in the next 3 or 4 days.
All right, if you can do it this weekend,
right,
it may be worth doing.
Do it.
All right, and then if he doesn't do it, should he wait until next fall?
Late summer.
Late summer.
Yes.
Okay, next August.
late August, early September, yes.
All right. All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. With me, Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Bill Graves, Associate Dean of the Graduate College and Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. They are here to answer your questions, so give us a call at 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Bill Graves, Associate Dean of the Graduate College. He's also Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. And Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist. They are here to answer your questions about the plants in your life. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Or you can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we've got Suzanne on the line in Grinnell. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi, yes. I was asking what, I'm thinking of planting a row of trees in a fairly wet location. I was thinking of sycamore and willow. I was curious whether there's any other trees that sort of like very moist environments, and also how moist can the soil be for those two trees?
Well, as far as the sycamore to begin with, it's a huge tree, so it needs a lot of space. That's a requirement. The willows tend to be fast-growing and somewhat short-lived. They have a number of insect disease pests, so they do tend to be short-lived. I would consider possibly a bald cypress. That is a deciduous conifer. It has very fine foliage, a very nice shape to it. The foliage turns kind of a brownish orange in the fall. And so it has a very different shape, a very different appearance to it. And it's actually native to swampy areas. And it will grow basically, I would say, as far north as maybe Highway 20 in Iowa. And so you might want to consider that.
Another idea might be swamp white oak. When Richard said swampy areas, there is an oak native to very wet conditions, and swamp white oak, Quercus bicolor, is the botanical name, and it's a fantastic oak that thrives in wet conditions.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, and so I could probably do a combination of those.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay.
Suzanne, thanks a lot for your call. And we have a couple other questions. This one is about a swamp white oak, although maybe not related to the swampiness. This is from David in Eddyville. I let a potted nursery-purchased swamp white oak dry completely out before planting it. It dropped all of its leaves. We soaked the pot. It leafed back out. We planted it, and it did well for the rest of the summer. Now its leaves are turning color for fall prematurely. What are its odds?
Well, trees typically, when they're under stress, they typically do color early. So it's just telling us that it's under stress. It doesn't really tell us if it's going to survive or not. So I would go into winter hopeful that it's still okay. I would continue to water if it turns dry in October and November. Keep on watering until the ground freezes in early winter. And see what it does next spring.
So don't create any
more
stress.
Don't give up. Don't cause any more stress, and don't give up hope.
All right. Sounds good. And Carol in Gladbrook asks, is it too late in the year to plant trees? We'd like to plant a tree that grows 20 to 30 feet, perhaps an ornamental pear.
Okay. It's not too late to plant trees. No, definitely not. I would say you can do that until early November. Now, as far as evergreens, I want to get those in the ground fairly soon because they retain their foliage. But as far as deciduous trees that drop their leaves, maples, oaks, you can plant until early November.
All right. Here's another email question, then we'll get back to the phones, 866-780-9100. This one's from Tyler. I put in a new dirt yard this spring. Some of the grass didn't take, I think because the ground was too hard from the skid loader when dumping the new dirt. Then weeds consumed the area. I've killed most of the weeds now. The first question is it too late to plant grass?
It's getting awfully late, yes. And I think in their case, they may have to do some remedial things, maybe bring in some good topsoil, bring in some compost, and maybe work that into the existing soil. So that's going to take some time, so they may not have time to do all this before getting it to work. So they may have to delay that and try it next year. Possibly.
Okay, and what can he do to prevent weeds from consuming the area in the meantime?
Well, there shouldn't be that many weeds that come up at this late time of year, so I don't think that should be an issue. I guess I would try to maybe seed next spring. It's not the best time to do it, but I would try next spring as far as seeding.
If it's feasible, if the area isn't too large, it might be a good idea to apply some mulch just to prevent much erosion of the soil that he brought in.
Okay, well, and then the mulch, when you work it into the soil in the spring, would also help it out, right?
Well, if it's wood chips, you wouldn't want to use that.
Okay.
You would want to probably rake that off.
Okay. All right. He's also asking specifically, I've been having trouble with yellow foxtail. How can I get rid of it?
Well, basically, foxtail is an annual weed. So the best way to prevent that would be to get a nice stand of grass. Because in that situation, the weed seeds cannot germinate very well. So next spring, if they do decide to go ahead and seed next year, they want to put on a starter fertilizer that contains a very specific herbicide that prevents the germination of crabgrass seed and foxtail seed. And they could find that at their garden center. And that would prevent those seeds from germinating, but allow the grass seed to go ahead and germinate. So they want to look for that next spring if they do it next spring.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Keith is on the line in West Branch. Hi, Keith.
Oh, hi, Sherry. My question, I recently lost two big old maples in my front yard, and so I went out and got a couple trees, a purple catalpa that I got from a friend's yard, and a bur oak that I dug out in the woods. The bur oak is about 2 foot tall, and it has about a 2.5 foot taproot on it. But not much side stuff in the root ball. I put it in, and all the leaves are turning brown, and not like winter leaves, but it looks like it's dying. Some of it's still green. But somebody told me that bur oaks are hard to transplant, and I'm wondering if I did something wrong or whether it's just a problem with the tree.
Well, they are hard to transplant. They're difficult. And you transplanted them when?
Oh, about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah. It's difficult to transplant your oaks, especially when they're in leaf, because they have a certain amount of water they need to support that foliage, and it's very hard for them to deal with that when you do it when they're in leaf. So, unfortunately, it may not survive, but I would assume that it probably is okay at this point. That would be my assumption. I'm not going to give up. And so I would keep on watering it through this fall, if it's dry, and then see what it does next spring. As far as the best time to transplant an oak tree, typically it's very early in the spring before they begin to leaf out. So typically maybe early to mid-April.
Okay. And just can I ask another question about the catalpa?
Sure.
It's just looking kind of weak, and I'm wondering if they would transplant all right. It's a purple catalpa, that's about a foot tall or less.
Okay.
Are they hard to transplant, or is there something special I should do to make that work?
Well, again, most trees it's difficult to move them when they're in leaf. So if this is a catalpa, it was in leaf, they have a big leaf, a huge leaf, and whenever you dig up something to transplant it, you do damage the root system. So for many trees, it's very hard to deal with that injury, especially when they're in leaf. So again, I wouldn't give up. I would keep on watering it through the fall and see what it does next spring.
All right, here we have a Twitter question from Esteban. My cottonwood trees began dropping leaves at the beginning of September. Now almost two-thirds of the leaves are down. Is this normal?
Well, cottonwood loses leaves early. And even a fully healthy tree, it's among the very first trees to have its leaves drop at this time of year. And so I would guess that it's probably not a problem for the tree. Unless there's some other issue, besides that with a disease, symptoms of disease. But typically, cottonwood loses early, so it's probably not a concern.
All right. And here's a question from Carolyn in Iowa City. Is this a good time to transplant Japanese iris and Oriental poppies?
As far as Oriental poppies, I would have said as soon as they die back in early to midsummer. Usually we'd like to divide irises typically around midsummer also.
All right, and let's go back to the phones. Next up we've got Luke in Iowa City. Hi, Luke.
Hi there.
What's your question?
Hello?
Yep.
I have a very large
American elm tree on a family farm, and I was just kind of wondering if it could possibly be some sort of resistance to Dutch elm disease, or if it's just an unusual tree. But it's probably about 18 foot in diameter, about 4 foot up on the base.
Okay. Well, as far as the odds, I would say the odds are it was simply extremely lucky. They have introduced a number of elm trees, American elms, that are Dutch elm disease resistant. But to arrive at those few number, they had to evaluate hundreds of trees, and most of the trees that they evaluated were not resistant. They were just lucky. So I'm guessing this tree is probably just lucky. That would be my guess.
And part of its luck might have been related to its isolation from other elms, because the disease typically spreads from one tree to another. So if it's the only elm in the region or the local area, that may have helped it avoid the disease for so long.
All right, so collecting seeds to start new elm trees from this tree wouldn't necessarily mean that they would also be lucky.
That's correct.
Right,
it's
right.
Very unlikely they would be, but still, you could collect seeds in the spring and grow them. They grow very quickly and easily.
All right, a couple, we'll squeeze in two more questions here. This one's from Jeff in Iowa City. He's wondering when he should plant his family heirloom iris bulbs.
Okay, iris bulbs. Okay, now most of those are rhizomes or some other structures.
Okay.
If they have them, I would do it as soon as possible.
All right, and last question from Jenny. I have a Northern Lights azalea that I'd like to take with us when we move. Is it too late to move it this year?
How big is it?
She doesn't say.
Okay. I guess I would try to do it after leaf drop. As soon as it drops its leaves, they have a very shallow root system. Try to dig it up with a nice ball of soil around the root system and put it in a pot or put it right back in the ground.
Okay, so even waiting a couple more weeks is probably what she needs to do.
Right, when it's basically dormant, bare.
All right. Richard Geron, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Richard Geron, Iowa State University Extension, horticulturist. Bill Graves, thank you.
Thank you.
Bill Graves, Associate Dean of the Graduate College and Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. We will be back again with Horticulture Day next Friday. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.